Today I have a special guest. Her name is Maydell Goulart, and Maydell and I are affiliated. We're both members of the Heart Center, and I think over the past year I've had many people on here on the show from the Heart Center, and Maydell is another member. And I'd like to welcome you, Maydell, to Return to Shambhala. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine.
Great.
Just ready to go.
Great. Well, I'm going to kind of set this up a little bit, Maydell. Maydell had a friend who went through a very trying experience with the Illuminati. But it turns out that it was a victorious ending. But I want her, I heard her tell the story on one of our morning prayer, in the morning we have prayers, we have songs, and we every morning. And Maydell happened to do one not too long ago. She presented this story, and I heard it, and I said, I've just got to have Maydell on the show to present this story, because it's very inspiring. So, Maydell, would you like to go ahead and get started? I'm not going to interrupt you. I'm going to let you go right through the story, and then we can wait until after you're through to ask questions or take calls, whatever.
Okay, question. You asked me to do three. Now you want me to stop in between each of the stories or do all three and then have questions?
Well, you want to do all three? Would that be best for you? It's up to you. It's whatever you think it would be the best.
Well, I would like to do all three.
Okay, that sounds good.
Any questions on any of the stories will be just fine.
All right, and let me just say, for those who have just tuned in, Maydell Goulart is on the show. She is with the Heart Center, and the website for the center is www.heartcenter, and that's an S, Heart Center. And I've mentioned this many times on the show. This is one of my favorite activities of light. So I'm going to let you go ahead, Maydell. I won't interrupt you, and you feel free to tell the stories.
Thank you, Vicki. I will begin with story number one. It's titled Tale of an Ascended Hero. This unusual tale I'm about to share with you was told to me by a close friend about her beloved father. My friend Beverly has since made her transition. The story begins when Beverly was a young child. She said that her father was a famous scientist who had invented a special instrument during World War II that assisted in navigating airplanes that was superior to that of the enemy, giving the U.S. and its allies an added advantage that helped to bring the war to a successful conclusion. After the war was over, the father set up a business where he could continue making advancements in scientific inventions along these lines. When the business was operational, her father then went to Washington, D.C. to procure work assignments for his business. While there, he was approached by a member of the Illuminati. He was told he could be rich beyond all belief if he would join forces with them. The father, being a true son of God and a patriot of his country, flatly turned down the offer. He was then told he would suffer for his decision and that he would never make it in the business world. Upon returning home, he gathered his wife and children around him and told them of his experience while in Washington, D.C., and gave them some background on who the Illuminati were, and to warn them to never, never get involved with the Illuminati for any reason. My friend never forgot that episode, even though she was just a young child. As the father's business began to prosper, it would mysteriously be burned to the ground. He would rebuild and start over again, and the same thing would be repeated. Unbelievably, this occurred 5 times over the years. One day, the mother was notified that her husband had a sudden fatal heart attack at work and had died at his desk. A funeral was arranged for the next day, immediately followed by a cremation. That evening, the ashes were delivered to the mother at her home. The next morning, a friend of the family came by and told the mother what he had just observed. As he drove by the funeral parlor, he saw 6 men carry out a casket that her husband had occupied the day before, and the same flowers were still on top. They carried the casket as though there was a body in it. The casket was put into a van, which then drove off. He asked the widow what she was going to do about it. She thought for a moment, and then said she would do nothing as she had her husband's ashes, and that's all that counted. As the years passed, my friend grew up, got married, and had several children when she was involved in a serious automobile accident that was nearly fatal. One of her legs had been severely crushed, and the veins had to be replaced with synthetic veins from her ankle to her hip, which required a lengthy operation. Either from the accident or the operation, I know not which, she had a near-death experience where she left her physical body, was drawn up into a tunnel or vortex, and at the other end was met by a being of great light, who she sensed was comforting and all-knowing. She was told she had 2 choices. She could stay in the heaven world, or she could return to earth and continue on with her physical life, but she would experience serious physical pain throughout her remaining years. After hearing this, she was tempted to stay in the heaven world, but then she thought of her children, who would be without a mother, and she realized she needed to return to earth life for her children's sake, irregardless of any pain she might suffer as a result. Like all people who go through a near-death experience, she returned to earth life with extended perceptions beyond the normal. She spent a number of weeks in the hospital before being discharged and was told at the time it would be necessary for her to report to her doctor once a week for a checkup until she was fully recovered. After returning home, her convalescence did not go well, and she began to lose ground. Then at one of her scheduled weekly checkups, she was told that she would have a different doctor that day who was filling in for her regular doctor who was not available at the time. It turned out that this doctor was from Europe, visiting this hospital for only a few days, and he was here specifically to see Beverly. He told her that the Great White Brotherhood had contacted him with a request that he go to America and assist with her healing by using his special talent. His talent was the ability to see through the dense physical flesh body and perceive what was going on inside the body at the electronic level. He observed that the energy flow had reversed itself from its normal direction, and that some of the power centers were either not working or only partially working. These power centers connect to the physical endocrine glands that keeps the body in good working order. So he reversed the energy back to the normal directional flow and fully activated the power centers called chakras in the east that were malfunctioning. From that moment on, she quickly made progress, and within a short time, she was fully healed, although the synthetic veins would give her serious intermittent leg pain and would require medication for the rest of her life. Sometime later, she would also undergo a mastectomy operation for breast cancer. She never saw this doctor again, but she often wondered about who or what was the Great White Brotherhood that the doctor had referred to. For a long time, she and her husband thought he meant the Mormon Church because they are referred to as a brotherhood, the Brotherhood of Saints. Many years later, As she was preparing a garage sale for the church, she came across a box of books that someone had donated. And the first book on top was titled The Great White Brotherhood and the Culture, Religion, and History of America by Elizabeth Clare Prophet. She was electrified when she saw the title. She read the entire book and was convinced that this was the Great White Brotherhood the doctor had mentioned. After making inquiries, she found out that she would have to go to Montana to pursue this further. After spending a few weeks at the Royal Teton Ranch in Montana, she knew that this was the place she needed to be. She went back home and told her husband that she wanted to move to Montana. Her husband wasn't convinced that this was the right thing to do, so they decided that it would be better if they got a divorce and she would be free to do as she pleased. Their children were all grown up and married now, so there would not be a big disruption in the family life. Sometime after she moved to Montana in the 1990s, she was attending the winter conference at the Royal Teton Ranch when she had a big surprise. This particular afternoon, the Ascended Master Kuzco, whose etheric retreat is involved in holding the balance during earth changes, was speaking through the messenger, and towards the end, he announced that he had brought with him 24 Ascended Masters, who are masters of the earth sciences. They knew everything there is to know regarding earth changes, whether it be a pole shifts, volcanoes, floods, or the rising or sinking of land masses or islands. All this was under their control. These masters have overseen the greatest scientists on Earth who are aware of Earth changes and measure them. We were given the opportunity to assist them by giving them our energies and prayers as they attempt to hold the balance for coming Earth changes. As the Ascended Master Kuzco was introducing these scientists to the attendees, to my friend's astonishment, her father appeared before her. She assumed that he had come with these other scientists as a spectator. She was to find out differently 3 or 4 months later. She was having lunch with a friend at the local restaurant across from the ranch and was discussing the Illuminati as each had a story to tell, when all of a sudden, her father appeared by Beverly's side and told her he was one of the scientists who had been introduced by Kuzco, and then proceeded to tell her what had actually happened at the time of his supposed death. He informed his daughter that he had been given a drug that temporarily put him in a death-like coma that only lasts approximately 48 hours, which is why the culprits had to fake a funeral and cremation the following day. This was the work of the dark forces within the U.S. secret government. He was then taken to an unknown underground base where he was approached about doing some special scientific work on a black project on which he had some expertise. This was a major test for her father, and he would have nothing to do with it. He said they tortured him for 2 weeks to get him to change his mind until he finally expired and made his transition. Shortly after, he made his ascension, having won his immortality, and was assigned to his present post with the Ascended Master Kuzco at his etheric retreat in the heaven world, as one of the master scientists in charge of earth sciences. I consider the father of my friend, now an ascended master, a hero, because he withstood the dark forces with the total strength of his being and mind to stand for the right and remain totally loyal to his God and his country under great harassment and torture that would have broken lesser men. If he had been aware of the violet flame, it might have ended up differently. But at this point, we will never know. He fulfilled his dharma with great bravery and honor, and he was rewarded with the greatest reward of all, everlasting life. This concludes my story of an Ascended Master hero.
That's a wonderful story. I love that. I love that story.
Yeah, it's a nice story. The next one began as a testimonial to Reverend Patricia Harth. On Tuesday, April 3rd of this month, it was announced by Ascended Master David Lloyd through our messenger David Christopher Lewis that Reverend Patricia Harth had made her ascension on Palm Sunday. She had passed on a few days before her 90th birthday. For those who do not know her, Patricia and her husband, Leo Harth, had moved to North Glastonbury in Paradise Valley, Montana, in 1988, and were one of the first pioneers to settle in this community. In the very beginning, only communicants of Church Universal and Triumphant were allowed to live here. That was changed in 1997 when the community was opened up to the general public. As the first president of the North Glastonbury Teaching Center, Patricia oversaw the building and dedication of Canterbury Chapel, which was a renovated garage attached to an old farmhouse, and was extended to accommodate all the people who would be attending services, which in the early years was considerable. It was all done by volunteers. It was a very nice little chapel, and I spent many hours there myself over the years. The farmhouse proper was utilized by the Thomas More School. In 1995, Patricia's husband became ill with pneumonia, and in a very short time, unexpectedly, made his transition. Though Leo had always supported his wife and her endeavors with her church, he himself was not a member. Having been in past lives a cardinal 3 times and a bishop 3 times, he had developed a strong loyalty to Roman Catholicism. He was devoted to Mother Mary and would give her rosary daily without fail. He was not interested, however, in the violet flame that his wife espoused. The unexpected death of Leo was devastating for Patricia, as they were very close, and she depended upon his assistance in her daily life, as her health was not very good at that time and continued to deteriorate after his passing. Immediately after Leo's death, he started communicating with her through their daughter, who was clairaudient. And this communication continued from 1995 to April 1998. Leo had been given a special dispensation by the Ascended Masters to speak to the community at large from the heaven world because of the serious challenges to the planet through the year 2002 and beyond, and the grave situations we would all face. It was thought, since he had just recently made his transition, that the students of the Ascended Masters would pay particular attention to what he had to say. He had been assigned to St. Germain's Retreat at the Cave of Symbols in Wyoming, and for the very first time realized how extremely important the violet flame was and became a strong proponent for its use. He regretted that he hadn't taken it seriously when he was in physical embodiment. He was now having to make up for lost time. He has given much insightful information over the years through this communication, which I find very helpful. Patricia arranged for the results of this communication from Leo to be published in 3 stages in booklet form through the Summit University Press. And then, when the dispensation was completed and they were no longer receiving his communications, Patricia then compiled the 3 booklets into a single book titled Messages from Heaven, published in 1999. I consider this book very important and is one of my very favorite books to read. It can be purchased from Amazon.com under Messages from Heaven by Patricia Kermond. This book was also a part of an interesting experience I had in the same year it had been published, which I would like to share with you now. Sometime before my former husband of 33 years and I parted and went our separate ways in 1990, he had declared to me that not in 1,000 years would he ever believe in the Ascended Masters or the Violet Plane. He was quite adamant. He was also a Catholic. 2 years after we parted, he married a woman named Floy. They happened to be twin flames, but neither of them were aware of it. 7 years later, he developed lung cancer and made his transition shortly afterwards in February 1999. 6 months later, in July, I was sitting at my kitchen table reading Leo and Patricia's book, Messages from Heaven, when a thought came to me that I should share this book with Floy, the widow of my former husband. I shook my head in wonderment and wondered where in the world that thought had come from. Floy would have been the last person I would have considered sharing this book. She was a dyed-in-the-wool intellectual and considered me to be airy-fairy. This was just not her type of literature. As I continued reading, the thought came again and again and again until after the 9th or 10th time, I was getting a little irritated, but I also realized something strange was going on. So I stopped reading and went into a state of meditation to see what it was. A few minutes later, I realized my former husband was standing there beside me, and he was the one projecting these thoughts to me. I told him I didn't think it was such a great idea, but he insisted that Floy had to read this book before she passed on. I told him it was a tough assignment, but I'd see what I could do. As it turned out, 2 weeks later, it was an impossible assignment. I was in Seattle, Washington, to attend my daughter's wedding, and I found out that Floy was in the same motel that I was, so I took the book with me to hand it over. I had hardly gotten any words out of my mouth when she went into a rage and refused to listen to anything I had to say. The interesting part for me was how quickly one's perspective changes when they make their transition to the heaven world. My former husband, who was adamant that in 1,000 years he would never believe in the Ascended Masters and the Violet Flame, was now trying to convince his widow of the truth through me of the reality of the Masters and the Violet Flame by reading this book, which she refused to consider. The irony was that he was about as successful with her as I had been with him. But there is always hope that when her time comes and she passes through the veil, she also will be illumined as he was. And that concludes the second story for this evening.
That was another good story. Thank you.
The next one is a little bit longer than the first two, and it's just titled Shambhala. There have been a number of stories about Shambhala that have made the rounds over the centuries that have placed it in various locations on or in the earth. The answer, according to the Great White Brotherhood, is that Shambhala is no longer to be found in the physical plane, but is now established in the heaven world on the etheric plane above what is now the Gobi Desert, and is the seat of God government for the earth. It was presided over by the Lord of the World, Sanat Kumara, for eons, until in 1956, he transferred the office and title to Lord Gautama Buddha, so he could return to his home planet, Venus, to prepare for the great initiations our entire solar system and its planets will be going through during this very important period of time. To tell about the beginning of my first contact with Shambhala in this life, I must go back and relate some 35 years of personal history. As a 10-year-old child, I was meditating one day about my father's choice of religion that had recently entered our lives. For 6 months, our entire family was involved in a weekly study of a Christian fundamentalist-type religion taught by two dedicated souls. I was disturbed by the teaching that claimed we only had one life, and if we lived a perfect life, we would end up in heaven, or conversely, if less than perfect, our future would end up in the fires of hell for eternity until we pass through the second death. As far as I could see, everybody I knew in my short life would all end up in hell. I didn't know any perfect people. I knew in my heart that this was a false teaching. I also felt strongly that there had to be someone walking the earth who was aware of the real truth. As I was meditating on this, I was visited by an invisible presence who informed me in my inner mind that I was not to be concerned at this time of my life, that when I grew up and was in my mature years, I would find a teacher and a teaching that would answer all my questions. I was totally satisfied with this information, and from then on, all thought of religion were no longer entertained. This particular religion, however, suited my father, who remained a devout member for the rest of his life until he died at the age of 93. Many years later, just a few weeks preceding my 36th birthday in 1969, I had an experience which I referred to as my wake-up call. I was washing dinner dishes one evening, not thinking about anything in particular, when out of the blue, a vortex of energy descended over me. I sensed I was being told and shown many things, but the frequency was so high that my outer self was unable to comprehend any of it. When this vortex finally withdrew, I was left with an enormous amount of energy that I knew instinctively I would have to use in a very constructive way. It manifested through painting portraits for the rest of that year, which I had never done before. It wasn't until the following year that I began my spiritual search. I had recalled the message I had been given as a 10-year-old child and realized that now was the time to start looking for the teacher and the teaching I had been told about. I found the teaching on the teacher in 1977 through three books I purchased in a new and used bookstore that was authored by Elizabeth Clare Prophet. It was an instant knowing for me after reading the beginning portion of the book, The Great White Brotherhood and the Culture, Religion, and History in America. I was thrilled to have finally found the one I had been looking for 7 long years. During that year, I tried out some of the prayers that were in these books, but as far as I could see, nothing much was happening. Then, in the following year of 1978, I received a beautiful catalog of the teachings of the Ascended Masters that were for sale. I ordered a chart of the I Am Presence and a 4-tape album of teachings on the science of the spoken word. After listening to these tapes, I quickly realized what I had been doing wrong. So armed with the new information, I began to give a 1.5-hour prayer vigil daily as instructed. Looking back months later, I realized that many important and positive changes had entered my life through giving these prayers, especially with a violet flame. It was quite amazing to me and exciting, too. In November of 1978, I attended a stump at UC Berkeley by Elizabeth Clare Prophet, which was an eye-opening event, and I signed up to be a keeper of the flame. Shortly after that, I started receiving weekly pearls of wisdom in the mail, which were recent teachings of the Ascended Masters. Because I was so new, a lot of it went right over my head. In April, a series of new teachings by Sanat Kumara, was begun titled The Opening of the Seventh Seal on the Path of the Ruby Ray, which is a path of divine love. The first chapter was very mystical, and I was so new I didn't really comprehend most of it at that time. The second chapter was something else entirely. Sanat Kumara, Hierarch of Venus, was relating to us about when he stood before the Cosmic Council, known as the Council of the 144, and pled on behalf of the evolutions of Earth, whose planet had been decreed by the Cosmic Council to go through dissolution because the people no longer worshiped the Trinity in the threefold flame of life burning upon the altar of the heart. They had become sheep gone astray. Their attention was totally fixed upon the outer manifestation and had willfully abandoned the inner walk with God. Men and women had become hollow, their chakras black holes in space. Thus, the light of the temples had gone out, and the purpose to which God had created man was no longer being fulfilled. One and all were the living dead. Sanat Kumara volunteered to hold the balance and keep the threefold flame of life for and on behalf of every living soul on earth until their heart flames could be reignited. After considerable deliberation, the Cosmic Council and the Nameless One gave their approval of his petition. I was on the fourth page of this teaching when a very strange thing happened. Without any warning, a veritable storm of emotion erupted throughout my being. A flood of tears streamed down my face, convulsive sobs shook my body, and I was filled with great sadness and pain. This went on for many minutes. My outer self was in total bewilderment. I didn't have a clue as to what was going on. I had to stop reading until this tempest subsided. By the time it wore itself out, my clothing was drenched from the copious tears flooding down my face. When my inner self finally settled down, I continued on with my reading. When I began the following page, I realized what the cause of this storm of tears was all about. The following excerpt from that pearl will explain it all. Sanat Kumara told us, quote, "Winged messengers of light had announced my coming and the disposition of the Cosmic Council and the dispensation granted. The six, my brothers, the holy Kumaras, who sustain with me the seven flames of the seven rays, Mighty Victory and his legions, our daughter Meta, and many servant sons and daughters whom you know today as the Ascended Masters, welcomed me in a grand reception. That evening, the joy of the opportunity was mingled with the sorrow that the sense of separation brings. I had chosen a voluntary exile upon a dark star, and though I was destined to be Freedom's Star, all knew it would be for me a long, dark night of the soul. Then all at once, from the valleys and the mountains, there appeared a great gathering of my children. It was the souls of 144,000 approaching our palace of light. They spiraled nearer and nearer as 12 companies singing the song of freedom, of love, and of victory. Their mighty chorusing echoed throughout elemental life, and angelic choirs hovered nigh. As we watched from the balcony, my consort Venus and I, we saw the 13th company robed in white. It was the royal priesthood of the order of Melchizedek, the anointed ones who kept the flame and the law in this hierarchical unit. When all of their numbers had assembled ring upon ring surrounding our home and their hymn of praise and adoration to me was concluded, their spokesman stood before the balcony to address us on behalf of the multitude. It was the soul of the one you know and love today, as the Lord of the world, Gautama Buddha. And he addressed us, saying, O Ancient of Days, thou art to us our guru, our very life, our God. We will not leave thee comfortless. We will go with thee. We will not leave thee for one moment without the ring upon ring of our chelaship. We will come to earth. We will prepare the way. We will keep the flame in thy name. And so as the Lord God directed me, I chose from among them 400 servants, sons, and daughters who would precede the 140 and 4,000 to prepare for their coming. For though they knew the darkness of the darkest star, in reality they did not know, as I knew, the real meaning of the sacrifice which they now were offering to make in the name of their guru. We wept in joy, Venus and I, and all of 140 and 4,000. And the tears that flowed on that memorable evening burned as a living sacred fire, flowing as the waters of life from the great white throne and the cosmic council, our sponsors. Unquote. As I read this, it was quite obvious to me that I had been a part of that great event, and it had triggered my storm of tears even before I read it with my physical eyes. And I have no doubt whatsoever that many of those associated with the Heart Center were there also, and many more who have not yet or who have yet to contact the teachings of the Ascended Masters. It is time to return to Venus after our long exile. To you who hear these words, you could also be a part of this ancient band of volunteers. And if so, the Great White Brotherhood is looking for you, waiting for you to make the contact as time is getting short. It is time to return to our planetary home. But above all, and beyond these volunteers from Venus, we were told that there are 1 million and more light bearers on the world scene, who, if they could take hold of the Ascended Master teachings, could make their ascension and bring the planet into a golden age. It is their time to graduate. Before I give an excerpt from a book titled Law of Life and Teachings of Ascended Beings, Book 3, by A.D.K. Luck, I would like to explain the differences between Earth and Venus. Our souls evolve in 4 planes of consciousness. The highest is referred to as the etheric plane and is where the records of life are stored. It is also known as the heaven world and vibrates at a very high frequency. It is on this plane of consciousness that the planet Venus manifests its magnificent and beautiful advanced civilization. What we perceive of Venus from the physical view shows it to be totally barren. Earth is the only planet in our solar system that has life on the physical plane. The next plane of consciousness down in frequency from the etheric is the mental plane. The third down is the emotional plane, or as it is very often called, the astral plane or psychic realm, and where the precincts of hell are located on the lower sublevels. The lowest vibratory plane is the physical or earth plane that is made of very dense physical matter. When someone from Venus enters the physical evolution of Earth, they must first put on additional bodies from the mental plane and the emotional plane, and then the dense physical form prepared by the future Earth Mother. The 4 bodies, etheric, mental, emotional, and physical, interpenetrate each other and act as one body. The souls begin Earth life as infants with all memory of the past sealed off from their outer consciousness. It seems to the outer self as though this were their one and only life, which of course is really an illusion. This was a difficult situation that the 400 volunteers faced when they descended to the physical earth to fulfill their mission for the establishment of a base of operations modeled on the etheric city of Shambhala on Venus. The following is an excerpt given by Master Kuthumi on November 19, 1955. He says, quote, "The original Shambhala was established on Venus, magnificent beyond all words to describe. In it dwelt beloved Sana Kumara, Lady Venus, beloved Meta, and the other Kumaras. From here, they directed the government and religious activities of their planet. The volunteers from Venus, about to embody upon Earth, had to imprint upon their consciousness and etheric bodies a picture of Shambhala as it was on Venus. Then, coming through gross bodies of the people of Earth, they awoke to infant form. Having taken on the certain heritage of race and national karma, and having accepted the bonds of forgetfulness, which are a part of the heritage of this race, they had to grow to maturity and begin to draw from their intuitive memories the picture and design of the city they had left on Venus. Drawn together by the bonds of interest in one cause, these people began the work of finding the right location for the beautiful city which was to be the home of their Lord. Their next task was to find the material of which it was to be built, and by the labor of their own hands, design from marble and stone, the vision they held within their minds. There were no clouds of celestial glory. There were no comings and goings of visible angelic beings. There was only the vision held within the minds of about 100 or more people. They were not all born within the vicinity of the Gobi Sea. Some of them crossed great seas and continents, drawn by the magnetic pull of what they thought perhaps was a dream, hoping to find others of like mind and heart. They came together as strangers of different families, of different races, but became bound one to another by this ephemeral dream. Then, joining their energies and believing in their vision, they commenced their colossal task. During that period, after they had built strong foundations for their temples, laid with care the wide streets, and planted fruit trees and the small saplings that would grow into magnificent trees, more than once, when they had it all set out, great hordes of untrained and savage members of the human race, called laggards, descended from the hills and wiped out every living soul and all their work. When they came again into embodiment, they found only ruins of their dreams and patterns left, and so they stooped and brushed away the rubble and started again. Then one day, working against the time, there was a cosmic moment beyond which the great cosmic law would not allow the earth any more energy, and Sana Kumara would have to come whether they were ready or not. The city was finally completed. And when Sana Kumara came, he descended into a temple so magnificent that the like of it has never been seen on earth, either before or since. There, in the presence of that humble few who had constancy enough to live and pass on and live again and never give up a vision, there he manifested the immortal threefold flame of God. And there began the reign of the Lord of the world. There began the nucleus of the White Brotherhood, which has been the salvation of the race." Unquote. This was the beginning of the spiritual hierarchy of planet Earth, known today as the Great Universal White Brotherhood, consisting of ascended masters, archangels, cosmic beings, and the Elohim, who reside on the etheric plane referred to as the heaven world. To briefly continue with the history of Shambhala, besides the ravages of barbaric tribesmen from the hills destroying the work of the Venusian builders, Shambhala was also destroyed by earthquakes at least two times and had to be rebuilt again. The last time this occurred was about 60,000 years ago. It is unknown to me when Shambhala was finally raised up to the etheric plane. But when it occurred, the entire complex and the inland sea that surrounded it was taken up, leaving behind a desert of vast magnitude. But this is not the end of the story. In 1981, an etheric retreat called the Western Shambhala was established in the Gallatin Range in the northern Rockies of the United States of America. The yang presence, or masculine, of the Lord of the World remains anchored in the east in the etheric octave over the Gobi Desert. And his yin presence, feminine, is now anchored in the west in the recently established etheric retreat called the Western Shambhala. Also, close by, in the etheric octave, is a very ancient, beautiful retreat of the Divine Mother on the northern border of Yellowstone National Park, which is the retreat of Lady Venus and the place where the Venusians stay when they visit the Earth. It is also the place of the gathering of all cultures and nations and peoples. It is the drawing together of many life waves, and it covers quite a vast area in the etheric plane. This concludes my last presentation.
Oh, Maydell, that was just so beautiful to hear. I'm going to just comment on the history of Shambhala. It was so thorough, and I'm just like a little child that loves to hear the fairy tales, but this isn't a fairy tale. This is a real event. These are events that have happened, and I just can never hear it enough. I just want to hear it over and over again, and I'm so looking forward to returning to Shambhala at some point in time. I'm just
is it going to be Shambhala and the Earth etheric plane, or is it going to be the Shambhala on Venus?
On Venus, I know. I love them both. You know, I love both the Earth, and I'm sure I love Venus. I was at Kitt Peak Observatory this Saturday night, looking at Venus through the telescope, and you know, hearing the professors talk about Venus and blah blah blah. But you know, in my heart, I was so connected, being up on top of the mountain there, and connecting to Venus, and
yeah, we're getting close.
Yeah, and all kinds of shooting stars were. It was during the new moon, and I had to be there on the new moon so I could see everything so much more clear. And yeah, it just felt like I was almost there, seeing it through the telescope and seeing how bright it was, just with the naked eye.
It is a great story, and there's so much more that could be said about Shambhala and all the activities that go on. And, of course, we in our finer bodies, while our physical bodies are asleep, can visit there. I don't know if we'll be allowed in, but we can certainly go in that direction.
Right. It's we've talked about that on the show before, how before you go to bed, you asked permission to go, and you kind of do some clearing, use some violet flame, clear the day's events, and prepare yourself. No heavy foods. Don't look at the news before you fall asleep. Try to go to sleep in a peaceful, meditative state, and you can visit these retreats. I know Joanna Cherry was on the show a couple of weeks ago, and for a while, I remember her saying that she had a room there that she could go to. She had her own small little room that she could go and rejuvenate there in Shambhala.
Right. This is true for quite a few, especially the Ascended Masters before they made their ascension. Many, many rooms that are reserved for certain individuals.
They need it for some reason, some rejuvenation. They're doing a lot of work in the dream state and doing a lot of planetary work and it's a healing place for healing. Now, the people that want to learn more about the Ascended Master teachings can go to our website, theheartcenter.org, and read about all the special events that are going on. Something's always going on through the website every day. There are prayers, there's events, there's a wonderful gathering going on in San Diego in May that I would love to go to. If you can't go, you can always participate through the website. This is the title of this particular conference in San Diego, May the 4th through the 6th, is entitled Ye Are Gods. Jesus and Melchizedek come to claim new initiates for Aquarius. This is a beautiful place. It's going to be at the it's at the Holiday Inn on Bayside off Harbor Drive, which is it's so easy to find. It's right there among all the goings on of San Diego Bay. It's a beautiful hotel. I encourage people to go if you've never been to a conference. It's wonderful. It's the 3 days. Is there anything more that you'd like to say about that?
About the upcoming
upcoming event in San Diego?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
No, I think you pretty well covered it. It is a $333 cost to attend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on either audio or if you're in there in person. And I understand that the Bayside Motel is quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful view of the bay and the ocean. Jesus and Magna, their twin flames, they're going to be there communing with the participants. They're calling it heart-to-heart, an upper room experience of divine fellowship.
And
then Melchizedek, go ahead.
I was just saying, they're looking for new initiates to come.
Yes.
And this is so much needed right now.
It is. We need more hearts that are working together to make this change. Melchizedek, who came many, many thousands of years ago to visit with Abraham, he's going to be there, and he will answer questions. There'll be a darshan with Melchizedek, and his twin flame will be revealed and what her mission is.
That should be very interesting.
Yeah, that will be.
You know, I was doing my research for Shambhala. I came across something that I think I would like to read.
Sure.
It was something that Archangel Raphael gave a report in 1989 on the recent excursion to the plains of the astral by him and Mother Mary, which included the descent into the levels of the physical plane where we live. For the astral plane is a state of consciousness and not merely a place where you go out of the body. He said, many people upon this planet, a far greater percentage than you realize, are the undead, the living dead. Far more than you realize are in a state of peril and imperil. Imperil being defined as the violent misqualification of the light of the chakras, which does place the soul in peril. There are souls being lost daily who are caught in the astral consciousness, fixed, hosed to the television set, which does feed into them astral effluvia and does take from them light. It's a two-way hose, beloved. They receive the astral plane, and their attention does give and sustain the media by what light or energy they have within their beings. Understand, therefore, that our message and our report is this. that souls who began with a threefold flame are losing their threefold flames. They are reaching the point of the squandering of the light where the divine spark is either about to go out or has gone out already. Thus, beloved, your calls for intercession must be for the saving of the souls who once walked toward the light and toward the central sun who have been beguiled. And so, beloved, there can be, prior to even physical calamities such as those prophesied, a far greater holocaust than many could even be aware of upon this planet. And that is the loss of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and even millions of souls by this process, where they lose the light, they lose the threefold flame, they lose the spirit and the energy of God within them, they become vegetable-like, and they then, beloved, are simply plugged in daily to the mass machine of the mass consciousness and the beasts of the astral plane of the false hierarchies of the international capitalist-communist conspiracy. So this is something to seriously consider, because things are not improving much. And so that is, light bearers are so much needed to learn how to turn around this condition situation.
That's right. Yes, the astral plane is really a road that leads to nowhere, and that's not a road that you want to be on. You want to go to the light. You want to go to the angelics, the ascended masters. There's so many disturbing images on television and in the movies. I'm going to go see a movie. Disney has a movie out about chimpanzees. Let's see a movie like that about the love between these chimpanzees and not feed into Hollywood all of this astral plane imagery. It's not good for the light.
Mass fear and violence and degrading morals and whatnot and so forth.
Yes. Well, you know, we've come to the end of our road here. It's almost 7 o'clock. I mean, Pacific time. We just have maybe a minute to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Maydell, for being on the show. I enjoyed your story so much. I wish we had more time. It seems like the time just flew by.
Goes fast. But it was a privilege for me to be on your program. I thank you so much.
Yes, well, thank you.
And I hope your audience, the listeners, were able to receive helpful information that they may not have known about before, or
confirmation
would be a help on their path.
Yes. Well, and this is archived, so we don't know who will be tuning into archives either. So if you're listening to this on the archives, we wish you much light and love, and have a wonderful evening, everyone. Wonderful whatever it is, night that's left, and maybe we'll see you in Shambhala on the inner planes. All right. Thank you, Maydell.
Thank you, Vicki.
Goodbye, everybody.
Good night.
Namaste.